Hello and welcome to the Gandhara, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Pakistani government has just approved a plan to bring the country's semi-autonomous tribal region into the political mainstream, which means that if the proposal approved by the parliament, the tribal region will be politically and administratively merged into Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. The federally administered tribal areas, which is best known as FATA, is a volatile region bordering Afghanistan, have long been a stronghold for all sort of militant groups, and the region is extremely underdeveloped even in Pakistan's own standards. As authorities are moving ahead with the decision, voices are raised both in support and against the move. On today's Gandhara podcast, we will try to understand the implications of the proposal on day-to-day life of the tribesmen and women in the region, the changes this proposal envisions, timing of the move, and Islamabad's motivation behind the proposal. To discuss the subject, I have Afrasiyab Khan Khattak, who is the former senator from Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province and is the senior leader in Awami National Party, which is the dominant political party in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. He is joining us from Peshawar, Pakistan. Senator Khattak, welcome on Gandhara.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you. Also joining us from Pakistan is Ghulam Qadir Khan Dawar, the author of a book called Chiga. Qadir Khan is a gifted writer from the tribal Waziristan region of Pakistan. Mr. Khan, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to have you. And Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, is joining us from Prague. His website looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan, and Abu Bakr is also originally hails from the tribal region of Pakistan. Abu Bakr, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you, gentlemen. With this, Senator Khattak, it looks like Pakistan is finally moving ahead with the plans to reform the tribal region, which was discussed for years. So please take us through the key articles in the proposal. What are they?
Well, it's almost 17th report that has been written after 1972. Unfortunately, previous reports were never implemented, so that's why there's a lot of skepticism. But still, this is the first report that has some major positive recommendations. First of all, in a vague manner, it seems that the government has decided to merge this area into Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, because so far it has no administrative status, neither a province nor part of any province. Secondly, the government has also agreed to remove FCR, Frontier Crimes Regulation, a colonial era law, very draconian. The third important thing is the extension of the judiciary of Pakistan into this area. Previously, Pakistan's Supreme Court and High Courts had no jurisdiction over this area. So, and that's why they could not have fundamental rights enshrined in the Constitution of Pakistan. Now, judiciary will have jurisdiction over this area. That's another plus point. Similarly, the government has also agreed to provide 3% of Pakistan's National Finance Commission award, which is the financial cake of the country. So FATA will have 3% of that cake, which means it will get about 120 billion rupees. It's apart from 21 billion rupees FATA approved budget. So these are some of the positive things in this recommendation.
Mr. Khan, in your opinion, what is the most prominent change that this is going to bring to the tribal region?
We have to look at it from development point of view. At present, FATA is the least developed area, as you said in your introduction. The social sector indicators are the lowest in the country. And besides being a draconian law for the people, the FCR is an anti-development law. Nobody wants to invest in an area where the political administration can lock up, or it can seize, or it can confiscate the property without assigning any reason. So the government, no doubt, whatever investment it can make, it cannot give employment to everybody. Right. So the private sector plays a very important role in the development of any economy. Removing the FCR would encourage the private sector, and prosperity would follow. Secondly, I believe once the first steps are taken, like the superior judiciary comes in, then the other areas would snowball. All these things would, though the government has given a 5 years time limit, but these things are going to have a snowballing effect.
Abu Bakr, let's take your input on this, then we will move on into other topic.
There are a few things that we really need to remember. One is that Fatah was a colonial holdover. It was originally designed. I mean, Fatah is not a geographic term. It's not name of an ethnic group or a language. It was not really a region because the region can be either be Pakhtunkhwa, where most Pashtuns of Pakistan live, or for example, Khyber is one region where just the Afridi tribe lived. So Fatah is this narrow strip of silver of territory between Afghanistan and Pakistan. It was originally a buffer between suzerain Afghanistan. Afghanistan was a suzerain state in the sense that the Afghan king or Amir, Abdurrahman in particular, could manage his internal affairs, but was not allowed to have independent foreign relations. So Afghanistan was never colonized in the sense like India or other places in Asia and Africa and Latin America. But Afghanistan was never, was in 19th century, was a British dependent vessel or state. So Fatah was designed for this specific security reasons. And the locals were victims. There were all kinds of negative stereotypes and myths associated with this people of being warring tribes and that kind of stuff. So this is a step in the right direction. But of course, Islamabad is very cautious. We have to acknowledge that Pakistani political leadership has essentially done the right thing, but they need to go the full way. There is a lot of details of these reforms that are vague. For example, they are replacing this FCR, this colonial era law, with something called the Rewaj Act, which again is kind of a FCR light kind of thing.
Interesting. About one aspect of, actually all of you touched upon that, the cancellation of the British era regulation, which was described by all of you as a draconian law. While this law is being dropped, but it will be replaced by something that Abu Bakr mentioned as Rewaj. How to understand this, Senator Khatek? The region will not be fully under the jurisdiction of the federal law? Or if that is the case, so what is this Rewaj about?
Rewaj means that the customs, local customs, will be codified into law. The bureaucracy that has ruled Fatah like a fiefdom is adamant to bring a new shape of FCR. And it may be more of the same if left at their own bureaucracy is capable of maintaining status quo under a new name. But as my friends were saying, we have great hopes because judiciary with its jurisdiction over this area will not allow laws in any name. But apart from that, there are other concerns also. For example, the mechanism which has been devised for implementation of reforms is consisting of people who have a vested interest in the status quo. For example, the Ministry of Saffron, which is the Ministry of State and Frontier Region in the federal government of Pakistan. Now, this ministry is existing because there is Fatah. Once Fatah disappears from Pakistani administrative and political map, this ministry will cease to exist. So it's really a matter of concern as to whether they will be interested. Similarly, the Fatah Secretariat, which is really a big hurdle in the reform implementation, is also in charge of implementing. So that's another matter of concern. Why would Fatah Secretariat be very keen to lose its political power? And there's
just stick with the Rewaj and FCR thing. So what is the difference between these two regulations?
The Rewaj has yet to be made public.
Right.
It is still lying with bureaucracy. But the question is that if you are really going to reform, then why shouldn't the Pakistani parliament be empowered to give law to this area? Why should the bureaucracy be springing surprise on the people of the area who are waiting for reform? So I think there are serious questions about the implementation, and the provincial government has not been taken fully on board. The province with which the area is going to be merged is one of the main stakeholders. But because of political differences in the provincial and federal governments, Unfortunately, the provincial government is not fully on board. This budget should have been allocated to the provincial government, but there should have been a joint mechanism. How can FATA Secretariat be trusted with all the development program while it is losing its grip over the area? So I think there are serious concerns about the weakness, and the people also have concern as to whether these reforms will be implemented while there is a war in Afghanistan, because this is the launching pad for two or three wars that have been fought in the last 40 years.
Okay, let's bring Mr. Khan here. So what is your take on the position that Senator Khatak is taking in this? I thought you have some positive views about the proposal overall.
Overall, the proposal is acceptable to the people. One thing should be highlighted over here, that previously, whenever we talked about reforms, it was outsiders who would say that we should bring in reforms in the tribal areas. This time, it is different. It's the FATA parliamentarians who initiated this, who are representing the FATA people, and the youth is coming out openly in support of these reforms. Surveys have been conducted where about 80% of the population is supporting the reforms package. So,
Mr. Khan, Maulana Fazlur Rahman was saying 80% of the population of FATA is against this.
No, there was, I think, a report presented by some NGO funded by the DFID, I believe, who presented their report, and it was their figures that more than 76% of the people, they were supportive of these reforms. And this initiative has actually come from within FATA. It has not been sort of imposed on the people of FATA. So Maulana Fazlur Rahman is one isolated person. All the other political parties, whether it's Mr. Khatak's ANP or the ruling Muslim League or the Pakistan People's Party who had their government previously. So all these major parties, including Imran Khan's PTI, they are supporting these reforms.
Okay, Abu Bakr, jump in, please. You have different opinion on all these matters that Mr. Khan was talking about.
I think our other participant will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the key changes here is that with the abolition of FCR, collective responsibility will end. Previously, big cruelties in FATA was that the entire tribe, community, clan was held responsible for the actions of one individual. Yeah. And that has resulted in a lot of destruction in FATA in the previous 10 years, because entire tribal communities, tribes, villages, entire regions were forced to leave their houses. They were first hostages to terrorists for 10 years. And then when the Pakistani military went in and conducted all these anti-terrorist operations, they basically used this kind of scorched earth tactics where they uprooted entire communities. So that is, I think, a very good step. It also means that the people of tribal areas will now enjoy all the fundamental human rights, the civic rights that the Pakistani constitution grants its citizens. Now, on the dangers of where these things will go, I mean, one of the things that the reforms have established is this kind of local government system. But again, the system will be implemented after the 2018 parliamentary elections. Luckily, FATA will have representation in the provincial parliament. Mm. As I said earlier, this is a step in the right direction, but now the devil's in the details. And I think this coalition of Pakistani political parties, lawmakers from FATA, civil society leaders such as Mr. Khatak, FATA intellectuals such as Mr. Dawar. Now, they have a very important role to play here. They should help the government where the government needs help. It's very important to understand for our foreign listeners that FATA's issue is kind of one of the stories of democracy's success in Pakistan. It was an issue that brought together a broad coalition of political parties, civil society activists from all regions, all kinds of backgrounds, Islamists, right-wing parties, left-wing parties, mainstream parties, regional ethno-nationalist parties. This is a great omen for democracy in Pakistan. And finally, you mentioned Maulana Fazlur Rahman, and of course, there are two or three different kinds of vested interest in FATA or reforms around FATA. One is the Islamist political parties, Fazlur Rahman is clearly interested in ruling the region as his fiefdom. I'm happy to report as a journalist covering the region and somebody who was born and raised in the region that the popularity of some of these very hardline parties is an all-time low. Fatah, the society has changed. Fatah has now its own civil society. There is an educated class who were at the forefront of this campaign for reforms. And luckily, these people have great many allies in the Pakistani civil society and now in the Pakistani Democratic political parties.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm still kind of stuck with this FCR thing here, FCR and Rivaj. Now, if FCR being dropped, let's say if it goes smoothly, in the meantime, you have Rivaj Act, Pakistan's own law, and in parts of the tribal region, like in Malakand, I think you also have something called Nizami Adl, right? So you have three different laws governing the region. Is it not getting so confusing for the people in the region, Mr. Khan?
You see, once the jurisdiction of the superior judiciary is extended, then all those areas which are rough edges are left out or whatever, they are problematic areas, the courts would be there to resolve them. At present, the political agent is the executive and the judiciary. He has all the powers. So they are not interested in resolving the issues of the common man.
So you are saying that FCR will be gone, Rivaj Act will be gone, and Nizami Adil will be gone. All of them will be gone.
FCR from Pata, from the provincial, the Malakand area, that's known as the provincially administered tribal area, it was struck down by Peshawar High Court. So if there is anything which is repugnant to the constitution, like FCR is repugnant to the constitution, but the superior judiciary doesn't have jurisdiction in Fata, so they are unable to strike it down. But once they have jurisdiction in the tribal areas, so any law repugnant to Islam or constitution would be struck down. So I don't think that is going to be a major issue as far as the law of the land is concerned. As far as Nizami Adil is concerned, this Rivaj Act was also given, Nizami Adil name was given first, then it was Good Governance Act, and now it's the Rivaj Act. So the Nizami Adil in Malakand, except for the change of nomenclatures, I don't think there is much of a difference in the Pakistan Penal Code extends to Malakand as much as it extends to the other areas. So I don't think there is any major problem in that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Khan, you think there are huge support for this reform, but few people like Fazlur Rahman or let's say Mahmoud Khan Achakzai also suggest that maybe instead of merging the region into Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, another province could be created. Why we went to this direction instead of trying to create another state?
Well, all the major parties have been supporting reforms and merger. Maulana Fazlur Rahman has some vested interest in the status quo because this Fata area is like a catchment area for his religious seminaries. So he is really averse to the idea of merger because that will sort of transform this area into more open area where modern education system will go and replace his seminaries. But I believe people are supporting it, majority of people are supporting it. The direction is positive, I agree with that analysis. But I just want to add that the monitoring system which the government has initiated in this package does not include FATA representatives. All of these people are outsiders who are implementing these reforms. Similarly, the growing tension between Pakistan and Afghanistan can also destabilize FATA, creating questions about the future reforms. There are still terrorist pockets in this area. In this last 1 month, Pakistani F-16s have bombarded the area twice, in Waziristan and in Khyber. Similarly, there have been attacks on Pakistani security forces in this week. So these are matters of concern, but I believe that Pakistani state government and all major political parties can put their heads together, their energy together, to implement these reforms in a peaceful manner, because ultimately this area should be properly integrated into the state system. It's good for Pakistan, it's good for democracy, it's good for peace and stability in the region, it's good for Afghanistan, because this is a sort of a no-go area, a black hole presently. So it will become a regularly administered area under state control.
You said it's good for also for Afghanistan. That kind of raises another question. Like historically, Afghanistan has an argument about the Durand Line and also Pashtun populated region of Pakistan. So what kind of reaction is being created from Afghan side so far, Mr. Khadr?
The Afghan government has not negatively reacted to it. I think it will help Afghanistan because this area under state control and with access to civil society and media, this area will not anymore be used against Afghanistan as a launching pad of wars. In the last 40 years, this area has been used for wars in Afghanistan. So it's in the interest of Afghanistan and peace and stability in that country that this area is brought under regular state administration and writ of the state.
Abu Bakr, have you come across with anything, any reaction from the Afghan side so far on this proposal?
A few days ago, I think the Afghan Minister for Border and Tribal Affairs, Mr. Ghafur Lewal, said that Pakistan should have consulted Afghanistan because he quoted a treaty between British India and Afghanistan dating back to 1920, which says that the two sides should consult each other before making any major changes among the communities or regions on their side of the Durand Line, which is this 1993 border. Afghanistan, of course, has never recognized this, the Durand Line, as an international border. There was also some interesting reaction from former President Karzai, who tweeted and supported an end to FCR, but also reiterated Afghanistan's traditional position that Kabul has never recognized the Durand Line. I must also note here that I think for Afghanistan currently, while I mean the public posturing essentially will be that Afghanistan has not recognized the Durand Line, but I think Kabul recognizes a couple of things. One is that they recognize that there is no separatist movement among Pakistani Pashtuns. Now, whatever claims they might have over Durand Line, they will need an active separatist movement, secessionist movement within the estimated 35 million Pakistani Pashtuns. Most major Pashtun political parties, such as Khatak's ANP, the Pashtun Khwamili Awami Party, led by Mahmood Khan Achakzai, are kind of mainstream Pakistani political parties who have representation in the Pakistani parliament. And their politics, by and large, revolves around parliamentary politics, in a sense, popular politics, where they want to gain votes to kind of claim a share in power or power in the Pakistani federal democratic system, representative system. On the other hand, I think Afghanistan's immediate key interest, as Mr. Khatak pointed to, is a security interest. Afghanistan has been calling on Pakistan to help with the peace. Afghanistan has also been very vocal in demanding an end to cross-border terrorism. Afghanistan has always claimed that most of the Taliban leadership and Al-Qaeda leadership has been based in Pakistan. They're particularly very annoyed with the Haqqani network that they claim are supported by Pakistan. I mean, that has kind of covert support from Pakistan. And in recent days, Pakistan has made similar claims or reiterated similar claims after this current wave of attacks. So for Afghanistan, I think the immediate goal is some kind of stability, border stability, and end to cross-border terrorism. And for that, and also I think they have largely see the benefit of bringing development and reforms to Pashtuns in Pakistan.
Okay, thank you very much for your insightful thoughts, Abu Bakr. Now, claims and counterclaims aside, so what the timing of this move tell us? What are the motivations of the authorities behind it? And more importantly, what does this say about security and volatility of the region going forward? Are the questions needing answers? So we will continue the debate discussing these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Gandhara podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Majlis podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Central Asia from local perspective, and the podcast is published every week, most probably Saturdays, on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the discussion that today on the Gandhara, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Pakistan in Afghanistan podcast, we are looking at the recent proposal by the government of Pakistan to merge its semi-autonomous tribal region to Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province and its possible implications. Joining me in the discussion are Afrasiab Khan Khattak, who is the former senator from Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, Ghulam Qadir Khan Dawar, author and writer from the tribal region of Pakistan, and Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the podcast. So, Senator Khattak, let's start with you. There has been some previous attempts to make similar changes, as you mentioned, in the administrative structure of the tribal region in the past. Now, Islamabad seems finally moving ahead with its plan. Why? What has happened? What's the reason behind this urgency?
There are both internal and external factors. Pakistan political parties had created a united front in 2010, where 11 political parties had got together to demand mainstreaming of FATA. And they have agitated regularly. There have been public meetings. There is a nascent civil society in FATA. There are lawyers, there are students, there are journalists, there are chambers of commerce. All of them have been demanding mainstreaming and reforms. Externally, there were a lot of pressure on Pakistan because President Obama had called this area to be the most dangerous area. So there were international conferences. I participated, and Mr. Ghulam Qadir Khan also participated in some of those conferences in London about FATA, where many international representatives were emphasizing for the need of reforms. So there was a lot of international demand also. And this area, you see, became notorious after 9/11 when American forces came to Afghanistan. Most of the terrorists crossed into Pakistan and made this area as their bastion. So this area became notorious because when there would be terrorist incident anywhere in the world, it could be traced back to this area. So that's why people were saying, what is happening? Is there no state in this area? So Pakistani state had to take some action. So I think all these factors have combined into forcing Pakistani state to take certain measures to reform the area and mainstream it and properly integrate it into the state system. It's particularly important at this stage when Daesh is coming with its footprint in this area. Earlier, we had seen that in 1990s, when there was war in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda had extended its influence from this area into Afghanistan, and Daesh can repeat that story if no firm action is taken by states to integrate this area firmly. Even now, when the pockets of Daesh in eastern Afghanistan have been mainly consisting of people who have shifted from Fatah into Afghanistan, and even inside Afghanistan, there are Daesh cadres from Fatah. So all these factors sort of underline the significance of reforms in Fatah and mainstreaming it.
Abu Bakr, anything to add in terms of timing of these proposed reforms?
Well, I think internally, one of the key thing was that the tribal area was run largely by a kind of this civilian bureaucracy before 9/11. Called the political administration, headed by political agent, who was the most powerful civil servant, one of the most powerful civil servant positions in Pakistan, because he was the judge, the police chief, the sheriff, the major development officer in a region. So he was literally the king of Fatah. I mean, not hereditary king, of course, a bureaucratic king in a sense of a tribal region or agency. But with the onset of militancy, with Al-Qaeda coming in and establishing FATA as its headquarters. We must remember that, I mean, by 2005, internal Al-Qaeda communication, which was later on captured by U.S. forces in Iraq, claimed that Waziristan was their global headquarters. We have, it will be also very interested for our audiences in Central Asia to note that for a very long time, for more than 10 years, the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, the East Turkmenistan movement, and all these other, I mean, similar splinter groups, Islamic Jihad Union, they were all headquartered in FATA, where they formed new alliances, they morphed into new groups. FATA is the recipient of still the most drone strikes, U.S. drone strikes anywhere in the world, up nearly 500, which killed many senior Al-Qaeda figures. So domestically, when Pakistani military went in, they first encountered the military problem, and they were also, to be fair and balanced, they were also accused of fomenting the militant problem by supporting groups such as Afghan Taliban, Haqqani, the Haqqani Network, which is the deadly arm of the Afghan Taliban, and to an extent tolerating some of the trans-Islamist network. But Pakistani military encountered the problem of governance, what to do with a particular region after the military operations were over, because the military is not designed to govern. So there was a lot of debate internally within the Pakistani military, and one reason, frankly, that we are seeing these reforms today is that the Pakistani military wants these regions to be mainstream. Now, they might not have a very clear vision of how to mainstream it and what will benefit the country or their interest, but at least that's one key lesson they learned from it. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is international. FATA became synonymous with this idea of no man's land, ungoverned spaces in the international counterterrorism talks or narrative. So everybody, even if they were from Africa or Latin America, everybody now understands and agrees that you will have a terrorist problem in an area where there is no authority, where there is no government system, where is no local participation. And I think, thirdly, we should not forget that the tribal area was home to a pristine, archetype Pashtun tribal society, and that society also underwent tremendous social change. Since in 1947, there were hardly any schools, hardly any education in tribal areas, but today, most of the tribal areas, there is education, there are professional classes, the lawyers, the doctors. And since 1970s, a lot of common people, even uneducated laborers, went to the Gulf countries, and they were exposed to modernity. The Afghan war also attracted a lot of modernity in the terms of bringing sophisticated arms, but also exposure to sophisticated ideologies, not only Islamism, but also communism and that kind of ideologies. And finally, there was a huge internal migration of residents of tribal areas. And now the estimated population of tribal areas is still around 4 million, but that's a grossly underestimated figure. I think the real numbers is more than 10 million or maybe as high as 15 million. Huh. And these people, when they went and lived in Pakistani cities, if you go to Islamabad today, in every street you will find somebody who is from FATA. So this tremendous exposure, and particularly when they purchased lands and businesses in all the neighboring districts of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, places like Peshawar, Deir Ismail Khan, Banu, they could see the benefits of living under law, the benefits of having citizenship rights. So there was also this tremendous demand or desire in FATA, which was galvanized by 10 years of suffering, where at least 6-7 million residents of FATA were displaced. And more than 50,000 people were killed.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you very much. So what I'm understanding from Abu Bakr, your point of, and also Senator Khatak's position, that the prosperity in the tribal region might help to eradicate some roots of the extremism from the region, I guess. Unfortunately, we also have to end our discussion, the last point being, so no doubt about the good faith of the authorities, but going forward, what we have to look as a potential indicator that this is really addressing the issues that it's supposed to address. So what are the main indicators we should look forward to measure the success or the failure of this proposal? Let's start, Mr. Khan, with you.
I think once the merger is initiated, the commitment is to have a representation for the people of the tribal areas in the provincial assembly in the 2018 elections. So that would be the litmus test whether the government is serious about it or it's going to play around with it. So we would know by then if the government makes arrangements so good enough. Otherwise, obviously, the agitation and all those things would follow. May I also just refer to one point that at present, the government's policy is to open up the economy. You would be knowing that we have a very huge projects like the CPEC coming in, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, and the CAREC, the Central Asian Regional Economic Coordination. Without having a peaceful FATA, these projects are not going to be successful. Once we have these projects in place, then tribal areas won't be a periphery. It would become the center of all the economic activity. So we hope that once the reforms come in and once these projects kick off, I think this area is going to develop fast. And once people have something to look forward to, I'm sure terrorism would be defeated.
Very good points by Mr. Dawar, but unfortunately we have to conclude the discussion. So let's stick with the final points, Senator Khatak. So what are the indicators we should look forward to determine the plan is success or failure going forward?
The first thing is census, because so far the figures about FATA population are totally bogus and concocted. Actually, as was pointed out earlier, the official record says it's 4.5 million, but actually it's around 15 million people. So we should have census before elections of 2018. The second thing is finances. The 3% promised by the government, the 3% of National Finance Commission award, should be provided. It's very important because FATA needs money. Without money, these reforms can't be implemented. They need human and physical infrastructure. They need capacity building for a regular state system. Similarly, they need monitoring, oversight, because this whole implementation process can't be really done honestly without proper monitoring. Then there has to be ownership. People of FATA have to be included into this process. There is a promise of local body election, local government elections after the general election of 2018. All these needs planning and ownership, inclusion of FATA people, and the convergence between state and society, all getting together, as they say, all hands to the oar. So we have to get together to implement this thing.
Okay, Abu Bakr, your final points, please.
Well, I completely agree with what Mr. Khatak and Mr. Khan said. I think the first thing is that the government needs to go ahead with the implementation of whatever reform package it has agreed on, because in Pakistan we have often seen that promises are made, but they are never implemented. They're never honored. The second thing is that I think the most important thing for FATA residents and this coalition, which was unique in Pakistani political history in many senses, needs to stick together, and they also need to find ways and negotiate with opposition, such as some tribal leaders, Maulana Fazlur Rahman and Mahmoud Khan Achakzai. The key to understand here is that most of the problems in FATA are not because the people don't want change, the people don't want prosperity and development. It's because they were victims of circumstances beyond their power. and those powers, particularly the Pakistani government and the state, needs to play their roles in changing their fate for good.
Thank you very much for insightful comments, Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. And big thanks goes to Afrasab Khan Khatak, former senator from Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, and Ghulam Kadir Khan Dawar, the author of a book called Chiga, The Call from Waziristan. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today, for your time and thoughts.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks.
Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara. Until next week, bye-bye.